right. Now I'm going to do the thing that you don't like.
I mean, I didn't say I didn't like it. I just said it's too long.
I agree. It's too long, but we're doing it now. Hello, Cyclocross friends. Welcome to episode 113 of Crosshairs Radio. On today's show is from the Philadelphia desk of the Wide Angle Podium Podcast Network, our mountain bike correspondent, Dan Chabanov, who is breaking tradition and is here during the intro. Hey Dan.
Hey Bill. How's the too long intro going?
It's going well so far. By you being here, this could be either A, shorter, or B, just the whole episode. But
who knows where the intro begins and or ends?
It doesn't, because now I can't say, and now we're going to talk to Dan Chabanov, and we're going to do that right now. And see, now we're doing it. So that...
Yeah, technically, you just... So that's the intro. That's
that could have been
right?
The intro.
Okay, all right.
And it was like 1 minute. But I do need to talk about Health IQ really quickly here. And I am going to keep it short because this is a little peek under, you know, behind the wide angle podium, you know, where everybody's like toweling off the mud and putting on opening up a LaCroix and or was that a beer?
It was a LaCroix.
Yeah, I nailed it.
you know me so well, Bill.
and to tell you all that Health IQ, you all know it. I'm not going to go into everything that I go into every week. If you've been listening to this show, you know it. But here's the deal. We're sort of getting to this point with Health IQ where they're saying, hey, guys, I think everybody's fast-forwarding through the intros and no longer getting the message out about our great service. So if you have heard me talk about Health IQ, which is a life insurance company that works with people with healthy lifestyles like Dan and hopefully myself, who are in shape and fit, and they can show that through Strava files or whatever else, and can also take this really not too difficult if you know your cycling history quiz, and then you can qualify for savings and lower rates, and you will pay less on life insurance because you're a good risk for them. But the deal is that if you have thought about doing this and you haven't done it yet, now is the time, because we love Health IQ and we want to continue working with them, but we need this to be effective. So I need folks to go to healthiq.com/cxhairs, take the survey, chat with them about life insurance, and then they will continue to support us, and then we can continue to talk to Dan Chabanov. Hi, Dan.
Can you send them your media run file on Strava?
I'll bet I could, because I have it through my Apple Watch, and I did... I think I averaged, I think I did at least 8 miles of walking on race day for both Alpstadt and for Nova Mesto. So, you know, between like 14,000 steps.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. It's a lot of running around.
For Nova Mesto, it was, you know, extra special because we ended up just logistically with how all of the vehicles were moving around that Matt DeLarm. And I had to walk to the venue. So that was 1.7 miles just with all of our gear.
Oof.
Yeah. Thankfully,
you couldn't put the bag in a van or something?
Well, we didn't realize that it, yeah, it was just a mess.
All but right. Hindsight being what it is.
Yeah, just one of those things. But it was fine. It was downhill. So it wasn't too bad.
So...
We got to ride home.
Okay. I was going to make a downhill both ways joke, but
yeah,
it doesn't really make any sense. Anyway, you want to start in Alpstadt?
Yeah, let's do that. Alpstadt, and, you know, before we even got to the cross country race in Alpstadt, we had the first ever, the inaugural XCC short circuit race. Not a bad name, short circuit.
They didn't broadcast this one, correct?
That is correct.
I didn't. Yeah. Okay. Because I watched the one at Nova Mesto, and I have to say, really fun to watch.
So,
like, super fun to watch from where I was sitting in my living room. I didn't watch it live on Friday. I watched it sometime this past weekend, and it was some of the best like 25 minutes of racing I've seen in a while. Like
Simon Burney will be very happy to hear that, because
it was totally not traditional. It would like wasn't really mountain biking, it wasn't really cyclocross, it wasn't like a crit or anything, but it was like a good combination of all of that. And you were kind of, it was like short enough where you didn't really have to settle down for a long period of time. You could just like put it on for 25 minutes, watch it, be excited, and not know who was going to win until the last second of it. And it's a good bike race.
Yeah. And especially, you know, with the foot down and the save at the end, and then, you know, with Vanderpool had that lead and then giving it up. It was exciting. Going back to the Albstadt version of, it's so funny. You know, we call it short track. The mm-hmm. official name is short circuit.
Let's stick with short track.
Well, the funniest thing is all the Europeans just call it the short race. Okay, we're preparing for the short race, which I don't know. I just find it funny.
It's a little funny. It sounds a little bit like short bus.
Exactly.
But,
that's exactly right.
Yeah. I don't know.
It seems like by the second one, by Nova Mesto, all of them have moved over now to short track. So they, mm-hmm. which is good. But the difference, you know, you talked about the exciting aspect of Nova Mesto, and I think that track was probably the ideal track for what we want to see for this. In Albstadt, it was, you know, it was the same starting stretch. So that long starting stretch, and then that sort of left-hand turn to the technical zone, which is on gravel. And then they moved to grass through the technical zone, went over the flyover. And then where they just couldn't figure out how to make it work is they went up the hill after the flyover for the cross country race, and then it just bottlenecked, and they had to put them onto this short section of single track, which is not supposed to be part of short track. I know in the US it is, there'll be these little parts of single track, but for the UCI races, you know, you're supposed to be able to pass everywhere on the course. You know, there's not supposed to be any single track sections. And there was one. And then it was just back onto the grass for the rest of the course. And it truly was just this big horse race. You know, you needed a huge engine. So it was basically built for Vanderpool. You know, it looked like one of the 32 cyclocross races that he won. He basically, except he sat in for a couple laps. And then
seems to be a trend with the big engines this season.
Yeah, and then it was just done, and he's looked back. And then, like, Sam Gaze, you know, was able to jump at the end and get second, and he's another big road guy, you know, so it was another huge engine. So mm-hmm. you know, but it was, the nice thing about that, you know, and I wasn't sure at first, and I was sort of like, I have one bias in this, well, so I'll get to in a second, but then you get guys like Marco Fontana, who have been, in the past couple of years, perennially in the fourth, fifth, sixth row starting, who's starting on the front row. So it's kind of cool that it gives some people an opportunity to jump up there.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, speaking of particularly Fontana, he's actually been riding really well this season.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, you know, it's still in a way like a merit based grid system. And if nothing else, from Albstadt, we learned that a third row start really doesn't handicap Nino Schurter all that much.
Yeah, I'm glad you said Nino Schurter, because that was the argument that was being made. It was like, well, it's really not that big of a penalty, but you're talking about a huge exception.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of like when Peter Sagan like started on the last row of the cross-country race at the Olympics and was in the lead group. It's like, It's for most mere mortals, it is a pretty big handicap. But my point is still that like a third row start for a lot of these guys is not crazy. And with the well laid out start loops that most of these World Cups have, if you're on a good day, you can move up.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you're having a bad day, like it's not going to help you because you're at the pinnacle of the sport. there's only really, really talented riders around you, and if you're on a bad day, it's kind of
the other thing that it sets up, like the points, it looks like the points only go five deep, which was interesting. So one thing, Vanderpool put himself into the UCI leader's jersey by winning the short track.
Yeah.
And then getting second at Novomesto. So that's kind of an interesting little twist on it that, he was wearing the leader's jersey for the UCI cross country by basically winning and coming in second in short track. The thing that happens though, and we saw this was, definitely true in Albstadt, for people to know, it's only the top 40 are allowed to race the short track. Mm-hmm. So that's the cutoff. So a couple interesting things happen there. One of the neat things, Nicholas, what was his name? Rohrbach, mm-hmm. Swiss guy who was in the US for a while.
Yeah.
Rohrbach. Yeah. Nicola Rohrbach. He was 41st in the world. I forget who it was. Somebody didn't race, moved out, was not racing. So he was able to move in there as 41st in the world, got into 40th by somebody not participating, and then ended up 16th. So he was on the second row. So here's a guy who, he took the most advantage. One, wouldn't have even been in the race, was able to sneak into the race, and then got on the second row. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, walked away with 10th, if I'm reading this right.
In the World Cup. Albstadt. He was 16th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the one where he was 40th. So he's moved up. Yeah. He's moved up since then. So now he's, sort of in the mix.
I'm looking at the cross country results from Albstadt, not the XCO.
Oh yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, even better. So results. I mean, took huge advantage of that second row and puts in a top 10 performance. Yeah, he's an interesting one because he sort of snuck up on people in the U.S., coming in second to Blevins a couple times and then winning short track at Sea Otter, and people weren't really sure who he was, 32-year-old guy from Swiss. We already know the Swiss, you got to go like 12 deep and they're still amazing. So it's but the other thing that I was going to mention about it is once you get down from that and once you're out of those top two rows, if you're not fighting for a top 16 spot in the short track, it turns into a party pace ride. Mm-hmm. And then people just get 80%ed. So you saw that and you saw some big names in this who were like, well, I am not in this. And then they just, turned off the engines.
So I feel like you saw that in the Albstadt short track.
Yeah.
Because we didn't get to see that. And from what it sounds like you're saying is that race really broke apart much faster.
You're right.
But in the Novomesto short track, we saw a huge group in both the men's and the women's field that really stayed together for most of the race. I mean,
I think
races were decided on the last lap.
Yeah, and I think it was because of that. And it was because of that better course. And there wasn't that single track, which really bottlenecked. So you had that group, that split early. So you did, and that's why it was ideal. So yeah, no, you're absolutely right. So everybody stayed together. So then you had a group of 40, pretty much. It was a little break, but everybody was in striking distance.
Right. I'm not going to quantify better or worse course just because like group racing with 72-centimeter handlebars is not everyone's cup of tea, but it was fun to watch from where I was. I'm not sure that I would want to race it.
Yeah. it's not, and we'll talk about the Novomesto course in general, but it's not like, it's a different kind of technical. It's more aerial technical than both going up and down than it is, you know, twists and turns, which is what Alpstadt was, especially when it was slick as hell out there.
Right, right.
You know, so yeah, it was great. You had that whole little rhythm section with the tabletop, and then you had the big whoops on the other end of it. So it was kind of cool to watch. The thing I will say that sort of got us bummed out about Alpstadt and it being just this legitimately a road race was, you know, a guy like one of the people I paid to follow is Anton Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
That is not what he is built to do. He is a cross-country mountain biker. You know, he doesn't have that top end just power to be racing on the road. So he was really, you know, he started on the third row. He fought hard to get on the first row if there wasn't any short track with his South Africa, you know, result and just UCI points from last year. And then because of this, you know, he's nowhere near the front and is starting Alpstadt on the third row. He was able to hang in the pack for Nova Mesto was up there, but it just seemed like it was a penalty for pure cross country racers.
It's interesting because it you know, it's like those guys are on such a different level than what a pure cross country racer is like. It's so specific at that level, you know, whereas like from where I'm sitting, all those guys have these enormous engines.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like you could put them on any bike and they would probably, you know, pedal away from me.
Yeah. And I think pure is probably the wrong word. I guess my concern was that people who are more climbers were going to get hurt by short track, which seemed to be more power, but we were only basing that off of Alpstadt, and you know there was a climb that was popping people by that last lap at Nova Mesto. So as long as the trains mix like that, I think it's a lot more fair. It didn't seem like that first race was as fair.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I feel like we're just gonna have to wait and see how it really plays out. I mean, you're kind of on the ground more, obviously, than I am in Philadelphia. Do you have like any reactions from people from those last two rounds? Like, what's the general vibe about the short track?
I think that the riders are not completely against. I think they're into it. And I think they will become even more into it. It's not Eliminator. You know, Eliminator was such a different animal. It was so foreign to everyone that did not go over well with anybody, even though it was really fun to watch. I think that the mechanics hated it, and so did the riders weren't huge fans of it. But this is like, yeah, it's 25 minutes of racing. It's a hard effort. It's on a Friday before a Sunday race, so it's not like it's going to kill anybody, you know, as long as you stay upright, you know, which was an issue with Nino in Alpstadt. He crashed hard.
Yeah, I mean, he had a minor incident in Nova Mesto that he had to, like, work his way back up from. But
yeah,
definitely watching the racing, both in the men's and the women's race, risk was a factor,
yeah,
in my opinion,
yeah,
from seeing it, you know, like definitely more, you know, it's crazy to think that like when they're flying down a pile of rocks that like risk isn't a factor, but when you're doing it on single track by yourself, I feel like that's what mountain bikers do. And like,
yep,
pack racing on a mountain bike is a different kind of risk.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, and I think that's gonna, we'll see how it plays out. But I think it's something that they are all looking forward to. And on the UCI's, you know, from what they are looking at, is they want more racing. You know, they're a business, so they would, you know, even though Alpstadt wasn't broadcast. It wasn't Nova Mesto. And going forward, they're going to broadcast, I think, all of the short track races, and it's more racing for them. It's more eyeballs. It's more excitement. So I think it's in the end, you know, I was not sold on it after Nova Mesto, more so just because I think that was just a spectacular event for it.
Yeah. I mean, as a spectator, like, I'm going to keep watching those races because oftentimes, you know, I generally can't watch it on Friday, but, you know, Saturday is definitely a nice quick, you know, fix of bike race spectating. And Red Bull makes it so easy to watch those races that it's kind of like hard not to almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you want to move on to the actual cross country races now?
Yeah, let's talk about that. And starting with Alpstadt, which was a fun one because you didn't know what we were going to get on race day. It was basically the weather that you were getting on the East Coast was the same weather we were getting in Germany. Like, I think it was nice one day there, and then it was just rain the whole time other than that. But, or actually it was like off and on raining, so it would like rain and everybody be out there like sliding all over the place. No, I take that back. It would rain and everybody would be able to ride the course and it wasn't so bad. And then it was the next day, the day after the rain, that it got like super slick. And that's when everybody was, you know, you've seen just people going down left and right in practice, and it was just a complete mess. And that's kind of what we saw on race day as well. And it was tough. I mean, I think that there were professional mountain bikers out there saying that was the toughest day that they had on a bike on that course with those conditions.
Yeah. I mean, watching the women's race, it was like, wow, these are some of the best mountain bikers in the world, and they're getting off and walking downhill.
Yeah. And that's,
it looked pretty nuts.
Yeah. And even spots, you're like, whoa, that doesn't seem so bad. I mean, giving them the benefit of the doubt, of course. I mean, I remember seeing Annika Langved just not having any part of it. Just even on the first lap, there's just this little down at the end of the start loop, and she basically, yeah, I mean, I think she took that cyclocross training that she had employed with those U.S. World Cups that she did early on, and she had a beautiful dismount at the top, and then just got off and ran down the hill with her bike, and you know, it was perfectly timed for her. She held up about four people behind her who couldn't pass her, got back on, and kept her position.
Yeah, I mean, when you know when to do it and you do it right, it doesn't cost you much. So
yeah.
That made sense. Do you want to briefly mention the U23 races at all?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't get to see those. Those are on Saturday, am I correct?
It's kind of mixed up where everybody seems to do it a little differently, how the schedules work out. And a lot of that's because of the local events that they'll have at the same time. Like Alpstadt has this big marathon race, and there's, you know, races that go on at Nova Mesto. For Alpstadt, I believe the men's U23 was on Saturday, and then the other three races were all on Sunday.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then Nova Mesto, we had the U23s on one day and then the elites on the other day, which is really nice for, you know, staff, media, everything else. Cause, you know, covering track, we got Evie Richards in the U23 women's, we got Emily and Ellen in the women's race, and then we got Anton and Sergio in the men's race. So that's just, you know, bam, bam, bam all day long. When you split it up like Nova Mesto, we got Evie on Saturday and then just the two races on Sunday. So that was a lot nicer.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. I'm just going off the results, but it looks like Evie had a good ride in second, and you know.
Yeah, she did, and that's the, you know, much like we see in cyclocross, the women's U23 is the one to watch, I think, of the men's and the women's, that is a really interesting dynamic that's happening, because you have Sina Frey, who, you know, won in Alpstadt, also won in Novomesto, is the world champion, and she can climb. You know, I think that Evie is better than her on the technical features, and especially descending, but she loses a little ground to Frey when it's when things are pointing up. The X factor in that is Malene Degen, who won in Stellenbosch. She got third in Alpstadt, but she is Sina Frey's teammate. So You actually see team tactics take place in that U23 women's race.
Interesting.
To the point that we actually overheard them talking about their team tactics in Novomesto, which we can get to, and it's kind of, you know, it was interesting how that played out. But for this one, it was pretty much Frey and Richards off the front, and, you know, Evie was able to stay with her, you know, put in those technical skills. But I think it's really just the climbing that's the difference there. But those are just, you know, super fun races to watch in that women's U23 field. The men's U23, Joshua Dubot from France.
Two French guys
in front. Hadn't really heard of either of them. You know, the guy who I think was a perennial winner last year, Petter Fagerhaag, in fourth place. And then I'm looking for his name, but the breakout, man, he just, Vlad. Where's Vlad? And wow, he's already down in 25th. But the breakout guy, I think, last week in the U23s is Vlad Dascalu, Romanian rider.
Yeah, I actually Pink Bike had a bike profile about his like full
crazy
suspension
bike. The Pro Tech. Yeah. But I think he's gonna be one to watch. And you know, that's the thing about the U23 for the men's and the women's, and we see it in cyclocross as well. At the top of that field, there's not much difference, right? I mean, you got 21, 22 year olds, and then you have like 23, 24 year olds, you know, mixing it up in the elites. Like, these guys in the top are going to be fighting for top tens in the elites also.
Sure.
So it's really just a two legit fields, you know, when you're going down there pretty far.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, it's interesting. There's only like two Swiss guys in the top 20 for the U23 men.
Yeah, for Alpstadt. Yeah.
You know, I'm seeing Spain, Czech Republic, Belarus, Italy, Finland, Norway, Denmark, France. Three French guys. Sorry, four French guys in the top 20.
Yeah.
You know, always interesting to look at the future, kind of. I mean, obviously, right. Switzerland has like a stranglehold on the men's elite field.
Yeah, and I was thinking, you know, I was looking, you got André Fischknecht, who's 24, but the big power who's up there, Lars Forster, who's 25. So you still have some guys just out of that U23 field for Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
Who are already mixing again. Marcel Greeny also, who is 24. Yeah, but it's interesting that no one else. I agree with you that it seems like there's less there, but that's not always seem like the case. I mean, even again, you know, going back to cyclocross, but we see it in the juniors. It's like there are no Belgians, you know, in the men's juniors.
Yeah,
and then all
true.
Of a sudden they just appear, and then there they are at the top.
Fully formed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way countries develop their young riders is feels like one of those proprietary things that people kind of keep under wraps, and it's like it's interesting to me because every once in a while we get glimpses of it, you know, and I feel like you get more glimpses of it in mountain biking because like you'll have national team coaches out there during pre-ride days with the young guys and women, and so it's a bit more out in the open. But in like cyclocross, I feel like you just, I don't know.
Because it's huge in mountain biking, the coaching. Mm-hmm. And like the one that I like watching is Pauline Fromm-Prevot and her coach. Because they spend so much time on the course. And you'll see her, and she'll be riding courses so tentatively at the beginning of the week. And they do cool stuff, like she'll run every line. Like they'll get off at a certain section and she'll just be, you know, have her bike on the side and she'll be running the line, like down the rocks and everything else. And they'll spend so much time. And then, you know, by the end of the week, she's on the podium. Huh. And I think it's that preparation, you know, and I really think that coaching is huge. And you see it you're absolutely right. All the different federations have their coaches out there, or just even, you know, so Evie is coached by Simon Watson, who's the GB coach. You know, but so he's still helping her, even though she's now on a trade team.
Right. Do any of the trade teams have people like that on staff?
They do. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not as prevalent. We love the Germans have this guy who's just a rock. I'm going to have to get some film of him, but he's out there in like these bright blue or bright orange, very German, baggy shorts and like, you know, his big pock helmet, but just wearing, you know, riding a hardtail on everything like Nova Mesto and just crushing. It's like, I'm sure this guy was pro at one point. I probably should know who he is, but he just looks like a dude out there, you know, just like total baggies and everything. And he's just like perfect lines and just nails everything and then gets off and shows everybody. And they're all out there. Every coach is out there with their iPhone filming, you know, and then they sit there and watch the lines and they do it again. I mean, it's a level of preparation that you definitely don't see in cyclocross.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not, you know, obviously the courses are there for a bit, set up for a bit longer than cyclocross courses, I feel like. So you have less pre-riding ability in cyclocross.
That's, yeah, definitely true.
You can't show up like on Wednesday and ride the course.
No, we've seen it. You know, we've seen those videos where, you know, they're out there doing their pre-ride and they're like riding around the tractor who's still, you know, like figuring out where the course is and that kind of stuff. They haven't mowed yet and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. I mean, I think when you look at the mountain bike World Cups and you look at cyclocross World Cups, even, it's like cyclocross in many ways is still like kind of small potatoes.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. I think that this is, I'd even say the level of, I don't know, I'm still sort of torn on it, but I think the level of athlete in mountain biking is way higher than cyclocross, with of course Vanderpool being the exception to break the rule.
I mean, the feel, you know, it's obviously it's like hard to gauge, right? Because like, especially here in the US, like the only mountain bike cross country races I really get to watch are the World Cups. So that's my only view of it, right? I don't know what like the Swiss Cup races are like on a regular weekend, which might be like the equivalent of a super prestige. You know what I mean?
I think that
it's hard to compare, you know?
It is. Well, I think it's even harder to compare because it's a completely different kind of riding. You know, mountain biking is really lots of spinning, you know, high cadence, where cyclocross is very low cadence.
Tell that to freaking, you know, what's his name? Tempier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for sure. He's French.
He's my spirit animal. That's how I ride a mountain bike.
But what I was going to say is I think that cyclocross, a better comparison for cyclocross is road racing. And we've seen that's easier. The crossover there is more so.
Right.
But speaking of Tempieri and the French, would you have thought that the French, I mean, especially like in their history in cyclocross, that the French are like the mutters of mountain biking?
No, I would not have thought that, but it seems to be the case. I mean, at Alpstad, what, three French guys in the top five?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a French party on the podium.
And only one Swiss guy.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that in and of itself is a huge story.
Yeah.
But three French guys is impressive. And I mean, honestly, it makes sense at Alpstadt because that seemed like a very climbing friendly course. And if nothing else, Steven Tempier is a climber.
Mm-hmm.
There's
some big climbs for sure.
Yeah. It's just funny watching him race because I'm always like, man, what if you'd start at the front of the field? You know, like,
yeah.
Because it's like he starts behind Nino by like what, a row or something like that. I think he was on the third row. And it's like it takes him four laps to make it to the front. You know, and then he's going like blow for blow with Nino, and I'm just like, man, if only you were up here this whole time.
Yeah, you know, when we get to Novomesto, Cooper was the same way.
Yeah.
You know, he was like 15th a lot of that race and just like kept slowly moving up. And then by the, you know, last couple laps, was like, there he is. So, yeah.
It feels funny that we're talking so much about the men's racing.
Yeah,
because it's like, because men's racing has been so boring.
Yeah.
For so long. You know, it's like watching Novomesto, the like commentators on Red Bull were talking about how like, you have to go back to 2005 to find somebody that's won a World Cup that isn't Nino, Absalon, or Kohave.
Right.
You know, and it's like that hasn't changed significantly. I mean, Nino has still won two World Cups, spoiler alert. And the only other one has been Sam Gaze, but it's like it just feels different. They're not blowouts anymore. And
no, he's being, yeah, he's definitely has competition. He's being challenged every round, a lot of times by Kiwis. And yeah, and you know, we haven't seen the best of Vanderpool yet either.
No. And it's just, you know, it's like, even though Nino is still winning, because it's so exciting, it's like I find myself rooting for him almost.
Sure, and I think that's good, but that's fine. And but that's the thing that you said, it's still exciting. You don't know, because you don't know if he's gonna pull it out. And we've had sprint finishes in two of the three rounds.
It's true. Well, all right, we should.
But let's move over to the women.
Speaking of blowouts,
yeah,
Yolanda's win at Alpstadt was what, 2 minutes and 16 seconds, and I think in her finish line interview she said she wanted to win by three.
She was like riding on a different course.
Yeah,
she's amazing. She is just amazing.
She was like visually, it was easy to see how much faster she was going downhill.
Mm-hmm.
It was nuts.
You know, and there was the big drop. This is the second year for it that a lot of the women crashed on. She was riding that so smoothly. And that was a really, you know, I was talking about how it was almost harder when it stopped raining. The women's race somehow got the perfect kind of moisture temperature mix for being the slipperiest time of the day. Like the U23 women, it seemed like it was tackier. They were riding that fine. They were able to, you know, maintain momentum, not get off as much. And then whatever happened, you know, a couple hours later, it was just a mess. And then it seemed like, I think it warmed up and dried out a little more. And then the men, you know, wasn't as bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of the impression I got. The women definitely, out of the two races I watched, the conditions were definitely a lot worse for the women. You know, like it looked like they were slipping in like very gentle corners, essentially. Like it was, they had to use a lot more brakes than the guys did. It looked like the guys definitely had more grip.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so Neff wins, Jana Bellomoina in second place, and Ann Tober in third. You know, Alexandra Keller in fourth. You look at that, you know, a little, the women, and this is different than what, you know, goes against what we talk about in cyclocross sometimes, is that there's a youth movement at the top of that women's field, where it had gotten, you know, it had not been that for forever. You know, Neff at 25 and Bellomoina at 26, got Tauber's young, 23, Keller's 22, which is kind of cool that it's these younger riders are able to excel and get to the top of the sport quicker, it seems.
It's true. And, you know, if nothing else, it means that now is a good time as any to get into cross country mountain biking, because you'll be watching these riders for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, get to know your pros, so to speak.
Yeah, Kate Courtney, American in 10th place. You know, she's also, you talk about the short track, and it's happened now in both rounds, both in Alpstadt and Nova Mesto. You know, I sort of briefly mentioned team tactics. Her and Annika working really well together to animate the race. Yeah, and Kate's a little bit of the sacrificial pawn in those races. She seems to be the one that's going out front and pushing the pace. Not exactly, you know, you as a former road racer can talk about this more, but probably not the positioning that you want, where you never see Annika. You know, see her until the end.
It's hard to judge, because A, the race is so short, and mm-hmm. B, when you're racing on dirt, sometimes the front is an easier place to be.
Yeah.
You know, because if you're on the front and you're just riding your pace and people aren't necessarily coming around you, you can just kind of ride your tempo. You know, I mean, obviously, short track, people aren't going to let you do that for a very long time, but you're also typically putting yourself in a better position, you know, in just racing in the dirt. Like, typically you want to be as close to the front as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, like, yeah, she's probably playing the good teammate, but on the other hand, you know, she's putting herself in a position where it wouldn't be inconceivable for her to convert those tactics to a good result. And like, particularly in the cross country races, you know, it's like, in both Alpstadt and Novo Mesto, like, she goes out pretty hard pretty early and tends to maybe like fade a little bit with like the second or third lap. But I have a feeling with the way that she's progressing and developing, it's like, it won't be that long until she's sticking in that lead group longer and longer, and eventually it's going to pay off.
You know? I agree. Like, and this is, you know, first year in the elites, and already in the top 10, you know, in these races. It was really interesting, because, and she's tough, tenacious, works hard. I think she was disappointed with her result in Stellenbosch, and it was a bit of a rude awakening for her, just sort of jumping into that elite field, but, you know, had time off, had like 2 months off till the next one, made all the adjustments, and these last two, you know, she's going to be, just as you said, she's going to be moving into that favorite pool, you know, by the end of the season, if not by next round or so. I think we are due to see, we're already seeing it in the short track, but we're due to see her up near the podium for the elites.
Yeah, I think she's definitely just improving every round, and I'm excited to see what she can do. So
yeah, me too. I mean, so
you want to just do quick top five for the men? I don't think we mentioned that. Just yeah. Said that there was a lot of French guys there.
Yeah. Winner Nito Scherder, Stéphane Tempier was second. Vanderpool in third. I think that you know, that was a tricky race for him. Probably down on the ground a couple times, still able to hold on to third. Maxime Murat, who two, three years ago, really up and coming season was right up there always with Opsalon and Schroeder, and we were looking for big things. Last year, I don't think the season that he wanted started to show up later, but probably not where he wanted to be. But he's definitely looks like he's going really strong again this year. So he ended up in fourth place. Jordan Sereau, great result for him. Matthias Flückiger stayed on course this year in sixth place. And then Lucas. Lucas down there in eighth. David Valero Serrano, the big Spanish.
Yeah, you were Spaniard. Talking about Nicola Rockbar. Yeah. I just wanted to say that, you know, it was really cool to see Tempe come up and challenge Nino in the last few laps. And it was just, you know, it was really nice to see another exciting men's World Cup race, you know, because I feel like after the Stellenbosch race, I was like, oh, wow, that was really cool. But is it going to happen again? You know, and like when Nino attacked on that start loop and got that big gap, I was like, here we go again. You know, and then it didn't materialize, and we had this amazing group race, and it was
I think that was also Nino just sending this message. You know, his whole shifting system failed in the starting grid for the short track. So he was already at the behind. So he's at the back. So, you know, third row is the where he was going to start. And yeah, just like you were saying, it showed that you can start in the third row and move quickly to first, which, you know, it is Nino, and he just didn't stop. Yeah, you know, believe me, we were at the start, and then you know, sort of make this mad dash for the start loop, try to run across that field to catch them when they're coming back down the Alpstadt drop and back around. And you know, he sort of pops out of the woods, and it's like Nino in first. We're like, how the hell did this happen?
It's Nino.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
All right. Nova Mesto.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This place. Well, I will just say that, I mean, on this show specifically, we always talk about people, you know, and I always ask people who've been to these races, what is the race you can't miss? You know, if you're going to go to Europe, it's like Coxide or Namur or wherever. I think there's only really one choice for mountain biking. If you want to go to one race, you have to go to Nova Mesto. I mean, just from the venue to the fans to the, I mean, I'm a vegetarian, and I don't know. Like the Trek video I did, it was just like food porn for the first couple seconds, just because it's insane. I mean, the food vendors, it's like moms out there cooking at every booth. You know, it's just, there's nothing prepackaged. They got these huge, you know, pots and kettles and everything. It's just, and they just come out in droves. I mean, they love it. They're still supporting Klahavi. You know, it's like he's on every beer cup. And it's a venue that is built for sport. You know, it's a skiing and cross country skiing and biathlon stadium and course. And that's what they're racing on. Yeah.
Awesome.
So actually, you can't see it, but when they make the U-turn after the start, there's this big field where the podium is. And on the other side of that field is all of the, I don't know what they call them, but all the little targets that they shoot at in biathlon.
Yeah, I have no idea what those are called.
Yeah, but it's just neat.
Let's just call them targets for biathlon.
Exactly. And then they have all of these paths, all these paved paths, and they'll have like their night race on it. But those are, and it's all lit the whole way up. That's not what they race on, but it's just cool because they have these other races on there. But those are all the ski tracks, you know, that are covered in snow and groomed. And yeah, it's just a great venue. And the way it's set up, it is a spectator's, it's a photographer's dream. Like, you can cover or see, even with these huge crowds, you can move and see the leaders three or four places in one lap, every lap.
That's awesome.
It's just so cool. You know, the Mita's choice, those that big mm-hmm. rock section. You can go there, and if you're at the bottom, you can sprint to the top of the hill and beat the leaders to the top, because it's such a steep climb that you can sort of bisect it and get to the top and then see them come up the top and then just run over and see them at the first tech zone and then down to where that like AC/DC section was at the bottom. It's just, you don't get that almost anywhere. You know, most places are just spread out and you sort of got to pick your spots. I'm going to go here and maybe here the next lap and here the next lap, or here it's like, I'm going to go these three places this lap and these four the next. And it's just, yeah, it's just so much fun. It's one of those things that you can actually be there, not have to look at the TV at the big screens and actually know, and see a lot of the race, where isn't the case in a lot of places.
That's it's good to know if I ever want to go see a World Cup.
And the trails around there are awesome. And then
although I probably would go to Mount St. Anne, I guess.
Yeah, but also if you do go there,
drive to that one.
and you have a bike, like that area for Czech, like the roads.
Yeah.
The road riding is just insane. So good.
That's cool.
All right. And now that I have done my Czech Republic Visitors Bureau ad.
you can talk about your boy Vlad again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's start there.
Took the win by 20 seconds. Over Filippo Colombo of Switzerland.
Yeah, so, you know, you talked about his bike profile. The one thing that is happening more and more, you know, we're sort of seeing this. It's not a new evolution, but I think for the World Cup circuit, it's a newer, because they sort of move slower and weight still is king. You know, everybody wants to, if they could have no paint on their bikes and save those grams, they would. So actually racing on a full suspension bike was something that was unheard of even a couple years ago. And now everybody's trying to move to it. And then in Nova Mesto, if you had them, you rode them. I mean, some teams don't even have them. So Albstadt, almost no one chose the full suspension. Nova Mesto, most everyone on it.
Yeah, those roots look punishing.
Yeah.
Like the man-made rock gardens, like they look very rough. But in my experience, like particularly the man-made stuff, like there are lines.
That's it.
You know?
That's
and
exactly
as long as
it.
You hit the lines, you can do them on a hardtail almost as fast as a full suspension bike. But the roots going uphill or even downhill or just flat across the roots, it's like there is no line. You just kind of have to sit and take it, you know?
Yeah. No, and I think you nailed it. And I think that's what it is. It truly is the punishment on 80% of that course, which isn't the rocks, that takes it out of the riders, especially when they're back in those woods. You know, you're climbing up roots, you're descending at high speed down roots and through turns. And yeah, I think that's where... just going back to Anton, I know last year he's a guy that does not want to ride that full suspension. If he doesn't want, he loves the bike, but just doesn't want it, feels like it might be a penalty. You know, he did a lot of tests on both bikes, the hard tail and also the dual suspension last year, and was faster every time on the dual suspension on full laps. So, and you know, as you said, I think it wears you down. So at the end of a race, you're going to be fresher with that full suspension.
He seemed pretty fresh at the end of that race.
He certainly did. Yeah, so so we got Vlad Daskalou, Filippo Colombo, Alan Hatherley, South African. Petter Fagerhaag seems to be stuck in that fourth spot this year. Joshua Dubow, I'm assuming he was one of the guys who was up top in Albstadt, French rider. None of his compatriots up there with him for this race. And yeah, that's pretty much top five and everyone to note in there.
I mean, I will say that the entire top, I would say the top seven are all within a minute of each other.
Yep.
Yeah. In an hour and 20 something minute race. So it definitely seemed like a tight battle. would be nice to one day see the U23 races.
Yeah,
but
that's it. Was it's insane too. 100 and some riders in this race.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
126 finished. It was
on the lead lap.
No, just finished.
Oh,
but still, it's like, it was such a huge field. They just kept coming and coming and coming. Yeah.
It's a lot of people.
Yeah, it certainly was. But that was
So U23 women.
Yeah.
Looks like Sina Frey and her teammate went 1-2.
Yep. And then Marika Tovo in third. So Evie feeling great all week, got into the race first couple laps feeling fine. She's actually kind of happy with how she was feeling, and then just one of those, I don't know, maybe if you've experienced this, like she came into the third lap, was climbing up the hill, and just had no power. It's like she wasn't, she didn't bonk, you know, she wasn't like tired or anything. It's just nothing was going to the legs, and she just, you know, could not produce any power, and ended up dropping out.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, in my experience, when that type of thing has happened, like everything is fueled right and all other things are going correctly, it's you know, I don't want to diagnose anything. It's for her coach to do. But in my experience, it's like you've overextended yourself by a day of hard training, essentially. Somewhere in that training block leading up to that race, you either went a little too hard or didn't give yourself enough rest.
Yeah. So here's,
you know,
yeah. And here, you know, this may have been a factor, may, you know, from talking with her, it didn't seem like it was, but you know, what we sort of were able to eavesdrop, at the podium area was, Sina and Malene sort of discussing their tactics. I don't know if it was meant for everybody, but I'll share. It's not, yeah, I don't think it's a huge secret, but they're like, Evie was saying that she was able to stay with them and it was actually pretty easy for the first lap. And that was by plan for those two. They believe that Richards is, always struggles in the second lap. And that's when they sort of have this plan to hit her hard. So it's, you know, this team effort just to sort of ride tempo that first lap. In fact, Frey was waiting for Malene, pretty much on the climbs, like, you know, sort of slowing down her pace, waiting until they got back together, and then they just punched it on that second lap and didn't look back.
Interesting. I mean, they have the same finishing time, so yeah. Did they sprint each other?
I think Sina had it. I actually, without Evie there, I just stayed on course and made sure that I caught other riders and did not go to the finish for that one.
Gotcha. Would be interesting to be a fly on the wall in the tech zone discussion there.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure they're getting, you know, I'm sure when they're going through the tech zone, they're getting messages from their manager, coach, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And coming into that last lap, it would be interesting to hear what they were deciding.
Yeah. And that's another cool one. You know, it's, both of them are on Ghost, which is, all women's team. So it's kind of neat that that's where their support is going for Ghost Bikes, and yeah, really successful program.
Seems like it's working well for them.
Yeah, for sure.
Do they? I don't recall. I think they're one of those teams that doesn't have a full suspension bike yet.
That is correct. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Are they developing one? Or
I don't know. You know, I mean, another one. The Spanish team, Prima Flora, I think it is, Coloma's team. They have like a handful of full suspensions, and not everyone on the team gets them. it's kind of interesting. How some of this stuff shakes out.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, if it was me, I would just take the full suspension bike and call it a day.
Yep. Yep. You know, and it, we actually didn't talk about that. And that was a question that you had texted me during the week, was about the short track decision for everybody racing the short track on their full suspension bikes. And that is the one, you know, for people who don't know, that is the one requirement of those races, is that what you plan on racing for the cross country race is what you race in the short track. So it has to be the exact same frame. They put a little UCI sticker with your plate number on your top tube when you start the short track. So, you know, you can't change that frame. You can change everything else on the bike. Like if you wanted to put, you know, basically a road cassette on your bike and race it in the short track, that's fine, but it has to be that same frame. So if you're riding a hardtail in the short track, you're also going to be riding a hardtail in the cross country. So it's an interesting, it changes a lot of riders' planning, because I know there are riders out there who, you know, that's Friday, they're waiting as late as Saturday to figure out what bike they're going to race.
Right.
And now they have to basically decide Friday. They need to know what they're racing.
Are you talking about Anton here?
No, I'm not.
He seems like he has a hard time figuring it out sometimes.
No, he's actually, I would say he is, no, he did those tests and he figured it out. He's one of the most, him and Evie actually are two of the most dialed athletes I've ever been around. And just pro and everything down to the smallest detail, they pretty much have worked out. So there's no questions come race day.
So speaking of Anton, yeah. You want to do the top five for the elite men?
Yeah. This was a fun one. So how this one shook down, like it, Anton coming out of nowhere, and it comes down to a sprint finish between Nino and Anton. And I haven't seen it on TV yet, but just seeing it through my camera at the finish line with that super long finishing stretch and the, where they're going over the bridge at the end, that mm-hmm. had to be just amazing, just because their heads had to just like pop out of nowhere and then they're sprinting.
I mean, I thought Anton had it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I thought he had it before they even got onto the actual straightaway, because the way that course lays out, like you go over the little jump or whatever, mm-hmm. and then the course kind of curves the downhill.
The
and
Rogue
right.
Double Challenge. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so Nino was leading it out. Anton was on his wheel. And Nino, you know, as the road is curving right, for whatever reason, he moves left. Like, in the road. So he, like, essentially opened the inside line for Anton to pass him. And not only is it the inside line, as in the shorter line in the sprint, it's also going to be the faster line because it's a slight downhill where they're doing it. So it's going to be a little bit steeper. Therefore, Anton can get even more momentum. And I was, as soon as Nino moved left, I was like, oh my God, he just lost the sprint. And then, you know, he ends up pulling it out in a photo finish. But like the whole time I was just like, oh my God, Anton is going to win a World Cup.
So this is how in tune these guys are to where they are. Anton felt like he was always 10 to 20 centimeters behind him and couldn't make up that ground.
From on the TV, it looked like basically Nino went, Anton took that shorter inside line, got in front of him, and then Nino kicked again.
Yeah.
That's what it looked like on TV.
Super long sprint though. So, you know, you figure, you know, having to hold that for so long.
Yeah, it was, But it just in general, I mean, the whole race, it look, what I will say is, to me, it looked like, so, you know, Nino and Sam, Gaze, and Vanderpool all had their, like, characteristically great fast starts. And Anton and Maxime Marat were just kind of in the cheap seats.
Yeah, they're 12th, 15th, yeah.
For the, like, first, I would say, half the race. And from the TV coverage, it looked like Maxime Marat really, like, put in the impetus to get across to that lead group.
Mm-hmm.
And Anton kind of, like, knew that that was the wheel to follow. I mean, it ended up on the, you know, on the last lap when Nino attacked, it was like definitely Anton had the gas, was the only guy that had the gas to go with him on the climb, which, I, you know, history being what it is, I think everybody watching for sure thought like Nino was going to drop both those guys like a bad habit.
Yep.
And when it didn't happen, I think everybody, including Nino, was surprised.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, I mean, you know, and you know, talking to Anton, he knew, and he was like, "Oh boy, this is it."
Yeah.
This is the race.
There was a very like palpable moment of this is it when I was watching that race, and it was just cool. It was very cool to see, and it was very cool to see two new faces at the front challenging Nino. You know, and Lars Forster had like mm-hmm. a fantastic ride.
Yeah, he was up there the whole time as well, for sure.
And not only up there, but he, you know, like, he was not scared of racing Nino.
No.
Like, came around him, yep. He attacked, he put in effort, and, you know, he was racing his bike like he would be racing anybody and not a guy that's won 26 World Cups.
Yeah, yeah.
So, it was very cool to see. I mean, obviously, Sam Gaze had a front flat and looked like he also crashed. Maybe something with his wrist. I'm not 100% sure. That was just what the coverage was showing us.
Yeah, he was in a sling. I think nothing broken or anything. Maybe some. But, yeah, definitely got beat up. And then, and Vanderpool just, I think, so his crash, pretty tame part of the course. I think he hit some roots.
He hit the base of a tree.
Yeah.
So he was coming, you know, he came down, it was off of pretty fast downhill.
Oh, did his bars like knock off?
No.
Okay.
His wheel hit. Like, all right. I watched a replay of the race today. And it, at least from the camera angle, it looked like he basically, you know, he came around this very fast left-hand turn and was on the right side of the course tape and was like trying, you know, basically trying to get his bike across to the center of the track to avoid the tree and just didn't make it.
He said it was his wrist that he wasn't able to control his bike as well as he would have liked, obviously, but and it was a factor of that wrist injury.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have to take his statement at face value. Watching his ride, it looked like he was just on the limit trying to follow Nino and overcooked a corner.
Yeah,
you know, it might, you know, obviously the wrist could be contributing to that, who knows, but that's just what it looked like.
He also, the update was no further damage to that, and he's racing on the road again.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, already yeah, I guess the first reports was that he seriously aggravated his injury, but after going to the hospital, it's determined the damage had not increased and the screw they put in a few weeks ago was still in place.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as he crashed and he was like kind of holding his wrist, I was like, oh man, don't get back on your bike. And then he got back on his bike, and then he, you know, finally got off his bike, and I was just like, I was like, you know. And then the commentators on the coverage were talking about how, like, if you don't let those wrist injuries heal, they like plague you forever. And I was like, guys, stop jinxing him.
Yeah.
Like, it would be awful if the sport lost Matthew Vanderpool crash.
Yeah. But, you know, it's also, yeah, so he's racing. He'll be racing starting Thursday in France on the road. He's like, well, it's
much easier. Guy is insatiable.
Well, and his quote is, road races aren't as bad on your wrist. The shocks aren't as bad as the mountain bike. But this is a kid who's already had 3 surgeries on his knees, and now this wrist. It's like, yeah, I hope he sticks around, but he has not been nice to his body.
No, definitely, definitely not. I like keep forgetting about the knee surgeries, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, I know, because it was you were like, oh, holy crap, when that happened, but it hasn't, you know.
Yeah. So what about the chain drop heard around the Czech Republic?
Oh, with Kulhavi?
Yeah. I felt so bad.
He's just, I don't know, it's kind of snake bit at this point.
It just seems like he can't catch a break.
Yeah.
And that's why I feel bad, because it's like, it'd be one thing if he was just like able to put in a solid effort and he just like didn't have it.
Well, then something happened to him in the short track too. I don't know if he crashed or what, but he
flatted, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had to like go to the pit and change his wheel, and then he was just like rolling around for a bit.
Yeah. Just soaking in the crowd. Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I just want him to have, like, one race where he's like able to just do the bike race.
Right.
And shit just doesn't go wrong for him, at least, right. You know, just so he can, like, I don't know, just so we can see where he's really at, you know?
Yeah, crazy. I mean, even with that issue, still just a minute off the pace, you know, coming in 9th.
Yeah, you know, and like he could have gone with Fumic and gotten on the podium, which would have been huge for him in front of a home crowd. So,
yeah. Speaking of Fumic, that guy's been on a roll for the last year and a half, you know, from winning the, yeah, just pretty impressive to see him still up there.
Yeah, I mean, he is, you know, him and Vogel kind of like,
I know, the old man.
Well, I mean, all also like Carlos Coloma.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're definitely the oldest guys in the top 10. 1982.
Yeah. The guy in 6th place, Enrique Avancini, he's a fun one to follow. He's a good rider. Got some he's worth a follow on Instagram too. He's got some cool videos out there. But yeah, he's like another Red Bull guy who's always confused, because he's Cannondale, but he looks a lot like Fontana out there. Well, I was like getting them mixed up.
Not only is Fontana wearing just a baggy jersey, he's also wearing just like shorts.
Yeah,
not bibs.
Yeah, and it's like, and the baggy jersey and the shorts, and like when that, yeah, when his shirt,
well, the ba-
when his
the
shirt ba- starts like riding, yeah, up his back, and you're like, yeah, oh man.
I mean, you know, he's riding great this year, so I'm not, yeah. I just think it's like,
I do like how you know, he used to wear all out baggies.
Yeah.
Now these are very kind of Italian. They're not like tight lycra, but they are far from baggy.
No, he's basically wearing what was a regular
he's wearing
jersey
stretched out,
10
he's
years
wearing,
ago.
He's wearing like stretched out bibs.
It's fine. He's clearly having a blast.
He can pull it off.
The visor on his helmet like really completes the look for me.
Well, the fun thing, and here's actually something that he did this week, and I hope that he does it for for the rest of the World Cup is that him and Rick were doing the Red Bull course preview together.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. You know, usually the cross country course previews are just like watching paint dry, and it's just boring commentary and not really, and you know, it's GoPros, so everything's flattened out. But Rick is very Claudio-esque. So, you know, just like running off the course and you can hear him breathing, and it sort of gives that, it brings that downhill course preview feel to it, which, you know, those are like the most awesome things ever. And, pushing that over to cross country. And then Marco's really good at playing off that as well. So, you know, they had it was fun. It was, you know, it was an entertaining course preview. And I think hopefully Red Bull kind of figured that out, and they will continue to have those guys together doing it, because it definitely helps a lot. It makes it worth watching those previews.
Oh, for sure. All right. You know, let's wrap this up with the elite women.
Yes.
I just, before we get too far into it, I do want to give a quick shout out to the USA women.
Mm-hmm.
With Leah Davison in 18th, Chloe Woodruff in 13th, and Kate Courtney in 9th. So three U.S. women in the top 20, which is pretty badass in my opinion.
And before that even happened, Chloe Woodruff coming in here with a plan is somebody who is not scared to mix it up in group races, has done her fair share of road racing, and fifth place in the short track.
Yeah, I mean, that's how she, and she was the, you know, I was watching the, she was the weird national team kit on the front row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is, you know, like, she is a rider that is fully taking advantage of the opportunity the short track provides. And I think is a great argument for why they should keep it around.
For sure.
You know, yeah, I mean, no, obviously, you know, someone like Anton Cooper is maybe the argument against, but I think this is kind of cool to see riders who are ranked very, you know, very low in the world rankings get an opportunity to start on the front row and then convert it to a 13th place finish in a World Cup.
Yeah, I mean, another one, North American, Haley Smith, took advantage of that. She was second row, 13th, with a 35 on her number plate. You know, so definitely took full advantage. I think she was probably the biggest. Oh, Catherine Steinman would have been third row, 23rd, and she finished 9th in the short track.
We should give a Crosshairs Radio shout out to Ellen Noble for making the front first page of the results in 39th.
Yeah, Ellen, I think it was a trial by fire for her in Alpstadt. I think that, you know, she was like, okay, I've heard enough how mountain biking isn't cyclocross, and it's not. And I think that was,
who is telling her this? It's like, of course she knows this.
Yeah.
Like, she has raced mountain bikes. She has raced cyclocross. She's raced on the road. It's like, at 23 years old, she's probably raced more bikes than most people will ever in their whole life. And like, where are people coming off giving her advice?
Man, everybody's got to.
Or like explaining the nuances between disciplines of bike racing. Just like, oh my God.
I will say this. She came into Nova Mesto, I think, a lot happier with that course. It's much more what, you know, you and I and anybody else on the East Coast are used to riding. I mean, to an extreme, I mean, it's very tough, but it's more, Alpstadt is really tricky, technical. Plus it was muddy. Plus they were huge climbs. So I think that really was that's a really tough one to jump into, especially your first elite race ever, you know, with it in a stacked field. This one, and even there, you could see like the things that Ellen was having issues with wasn't like big drops or technical, you know, that kind of stuff. I think she doesn't even
phase her. And that's really, you know, basically what you were saying with the man-made rock formations. That stuff doesn't, you know, she's able to ride that a couple times, nail the lines. And I think that's where she was able to move up a lot on those technical features that were basically point your bike into the line and let it rip. And mm-hmm. that's where she does well. But yeah, nice race, you know, going from 77th, 76th in the first race and then up to 39th and starting dead last. You know, you look at the start, she, I don't know which row near the end she started on, but she drifted back and at the end of the starting stretch was literally dead last. So that's a lot.
At the end of the first lap, I think the start loop, she was already in the 40s.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I saw her on the coverage.
That was a lot of kill points, you know, right off the bat. So yeah good result. I mean,
it's just another one of those things where it's like she obviously has good starts. Like she's going to have good starts when she finally gets a good start position because she races cross, and that's definitely a thing that's similar.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think once she's up there, she's really going to be able to like put together some good races at the end of the season.
Yep. Another person who was happy to get out of Albstadt was Annika Langved. I don't think she enjoyed that at all, and came into Nova Mesto and proved it there, taking the win. And that was one. I mean, you saw more of it in that final lap, but it seemed like if it was going to come down to a sprint, you know, we saw in the short track with her, it's going to be tough to beat Annika if you're coming into the finishing strip with her.
I mean, absolutely. But Yolanda Neff really did absolutely everything to try.
Yeah.
Like the whole race, you know, it's like Annika would open up a gap on the climbs and Yolanda would just shut it down on the descents. And like this whole race, we were watching the battle of these two extremely gifted athletes that were riding the same course very fast, but using very different techniques to do it, which is super cool, a super cool thing that I find about like mountain bike racing in general. But on the last lap, you know, it's like Yolanda made a point to get in front of Annika going up the climb.
Yeah.
And made a point of being first down the descent. And, you know, I don't know, you know, because sometimes there is a factor of like when you can follow someone down a descent, it's a little bit easier to go faster. Because they're kind of showing you the limits mm-hmm. in a way. And I don't know if it was maybe, you know, for the first, because Annika really spent a lot of time leading that race. And, you know, maybe just like following Yolanda's lines down the descent made it so that the gap didn't open quite as big. But there was still a gap that Annika shut down before they got to the sprint. So it was a really great last lap. But yeah, like you said, it's really hard to take her to the line and expect a victory.
Yeah.
So.
Finishing out the top five, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot in third place. And just still just, you know, we talked about Vanderpool and his wrist. It wasn't that long ago that Yolanda and Pauline were tangled up together at the bottom of a cyclocross course, both injured pretty badly. And here they are in the top three for a...
Yeah, I mean, I'll just preface that by saying that, like, world-class athletes, they're not quite like the rest of us.
That is certainly true. Certainly true. Great race for Emily Batty, who I think this was a huge relief for her, you know, finishing off in fourth place, best finish she's had in a while. And I think she's going to be going into these next few rounds with a lot more confidence and once again, battling for that podium spot. So that was really nice to see. And then in fifth place, we got Maya. We're just going with Maya.
Yeah. Polish last names are hard. Honestly, if I saw that in Cyrillic, I would probably.
Yeah.
you know,
I tell you that being in the Czech Republic, the second biggest cheering, the Polish fans came out in force, especially for Maya. But it was kind of fun. I mean, they kind of, between them and the Czechs, it's kind of got that, the whole thing's got that nice Eastern European feel, and they're it's like no inhibitions, just out there, just having a good time and just
all right. Cheering if I had to, off. If I had to guess, I would say it's Vlaskovska.
All right.
that's me translating these English letters into Cyrillic and then pronouncing it in Russian.
Nice.
So I would be curious if you can get a pronunciation next time you're in Europe, just to see how close I got. But
yeah, no, I will.
I completely lost my train of thought. On the broadcast, they were talking to the Trek team manager or whoever was in the tech zone for the team. And he was saying that Novo Mesto is not Emily Batty's favorite course, let's say. I was wondering if that's something that, you know, she said at all in the to you or at any point. I'm just curious.
I don't know. It won't surprise me.
Yeah, because I mean, if she's riding so well on a course that like she isn't particularly psyched on, I think it definitely bodes well for future rounds.
Yeah, she's definitely somebody who likes, you know, if it's going to be super technical, super hard stuff that, like that. I think that's more of what she enjoys.
And, did Yana Belamoina have like a flat or something?
I'm not sure what happened to her.
Not surprised. I'm surprised to see her this far down in 15th.
Yeah. But if we go back to the Americans again, you know, we're talking about Kate Courtney, just exceptional finish.
Oh yeah,
her ninth place.
That's great. She was again like from the gun up there, and stayed up there for, you know, I think the start loop and I think the whole first full lap and maybe even a little bit into lap two. I watched the race this morning, but it's all blurring together at this point.
Yeah. And then, you know, we talked about Chloe, in 13th, but little, you know, we can talk about it here just briefly, a little confusion with USA Cycling on the riders who show up wearing the USA kit. Some Twitter confusion out there that finally got cleared up. It's basically there's two points to the riders who are racing in their federation kits. The first one is you need 20 USCI points to be able to race for a trade team. That's point number one. So when you had, so Ellen Noble, for instance, at Alpstadt was racing in a USA Cycling kit because she, you know, being new to the elite level of mountain biking, you know, obviously has enough points in cyclocross, but that's not going to carry over for mountain biking, did not have enough points. So she was wearing the USA kit. The other people who are wearing that kit, like Chloe, their teams don't have the funds or the resources to support her. So even though she has enough points, she is riding under the USA Cycling banner. She is supported by the federation. So she's wearing the kit. Whereas Ellen, who was wearing the kit, still fully funded by Trek Factory Racing. She's not being funded by USA Cycling. And once she had the points from that Alpstadt race, she was able to wear the Trek kit, which she did in Novo Mesto. So a little confusion there on how that works, but yeah, it's two things. You need a certain amount of points, and then even if you have the points, if your federation, be it whatever country, US, Germany, Netherlands, wherever, then you're wearing that kit if you don't have a trade team that you're racing under.
Gotcha.
All right. Leah Davidson, we mentioned her, 18th place. Chloe, again, talked about her, but 13th place for her. Haley Smith, another one I just like following because I think she's going to be up there. Had a great showing in the Commonwealth Games earlier this year, and then 14th in this race. Yeah, and you know, the women's field is interesting. Just this, the riders who go up and down, like just going down here to 20th place, Annie Last, you know, that's somebody that we saw win Lenzerheide last year and is sort of like won the Commonwealth Games and now is, you know, 20th. So it's just interesting seeing these riders go up and down and completely tangenting back to the men's race. And I'll bet this is happening with Annie Last too. One thing that Anton was talking about was cause the Commonwealth Games were this year. And, you know, in the US we paid almost no attention to it, but for, you know, UK and Australia and all the Commonwealth countries, it's a huge deal. It's like the Olympics. Like it is a half step down from the Olympics. So it's something that they are training for and is basically their A race for the year. And for a lot of these riders who are doing that and training for that and racing before and racing right after, they're kind of burnt by now. You know, this is like up to this race. And I think Anton was feeling that in Alpstadt and was able to sort of put it together and come out with an awesome race in Novo Mesto. But I think for a lot of those racers who started racing in Australia months ago and doing a lot of travel between South Africa and, you know, wherever else, that this break now, this 6 week break between the end of Novo Mesto and until we have believe Val di Sole next, that it's welcome and a lot of them won't be racing a ton in that time.
That's, I mean, yeah, that's definitely interesting to know. I'm not even really 100% sure on what the Commonwealth Games are.
Everywhere that, like, the UK... No, I shouldn't say anything. Yeah.
It's fine. I can Google it. It's not that hard. Like, if I was actually interested, I would just Google it.
There but... you go.
Anyway, all right. I think that's a...
I think we did it.
That's a wrap. Yeah. It looks like the next time... we'll be talking, we'll be, what, middle of July.
Yeah. What is it, like, Val di Sole and then Andorra, I think? Is that right?
Yeah. That's July 7th, 8th, and then 14th, 15th.
I can tell you right now, that's going to be a really long drive.
Between Italy and...
Italy and Andorra. Yeah.
I'm guessing Andorra is a country.
Andorra is a principality on the top of Spain. Between Spain and France, it is it's a tax haven.
Is it?
Yeah.
So, is it a country or is it not a country?
It is independent, but they call themselves a principality.
Of what?
Spain.
Okay, so they're like affiliated with Spain.
Yeah.
But, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But separate. Everybody from Spain goes shopping in Andorra.
All right. So it's kind of like Delaware.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. What else? Oh,
come for the mountain bike coverage, stay for the Delaware tax jokes.
Exactly. Big news today in the cyclocross world. Super Prestige got sold to the owners of the Tour of Flanders, moving it into big cycling. So that'll be interesting to see what changes come from that.
I expect bigger VIP tents.
Yeah, probably so. there will be a
hey, how's you know what, while we're on the cyclocross tangent,
yeah,
real
yeah.
quick, but then we should go because this is already dragging on.
Yeah.
And how's Tom Musin doing?
Here was my interaction with Tom. Hey, good to see you. Hey there. He's like, glad it's dry. This is a Novo Mesto. You glad this is going to be a little drier week after Alstatt? I'm just glad I'm not racing the Tour of Belgium. All right.
So basically, he's just psyched to not be on the road.
Yep. He loves racing his mountain bike. I don't think he's like super concerned about making the Olympics or his results, and he gets to hang out and race bikes and doesn't have to race on the road.
I mean, he's probably going to make the Olympics. How many Belgian guys are out there?
No, you're right. Yeah, I don't, especially you know, we had seen in the past Quentin Hermans showing up, but he was not out there. So yeah, by default, if he wants to do it, if they have two spots, they may only have one spot.
Well, if they have one spot, they should just give it to Tom.
Yeah, may as well. You know, I like everybody else making the mistake. Yeah, that's right. Vanderpool, Dutch by birth, Belgian.
Oh yeah,
Belgian everywhere
Come
else.
On.
So he's a Dutch guy.
I mean, yeah, he's going to the Olympics too, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Well, I had 2020 is a ways, right?
Yep. That's he should 20, be able to make yeah, it. That'd be amazing okay. if Dom went. That'd be hilarious. He should.
I'd love it.
Yeah, I'll ask him next round if he's going. See, that's the other thing too. I don't think he'll fly to races. If it's drivable, he'll go.
Well, I think you have to fly to Tokyo. Unfortunately,
yeah,
like
no,
you physically can't drive.
I was just saying, I'm not sure he's gonna what other World Cups he's gonna show. I mean, Andorra, he'll go to. That's probably drive. That's an easy drive.
Okay, he's not going to Italy or Mount St. Anne.
Definitely not Mount St. Anne.
Yeah, they're probably not spending money to fly him to Mount St. Anne.
Be interesting. I'm sure Vanderpool will show up, but you know, we know how much he loves coming to North America.
I mean, yeah, it's gonna be tough. I have a feeling that if
he should just stay, you know, spend the month or so there, and then do the jingle and trek.
You're forgetting the last World Cup and the World Championships.
All right, so there are a couple kinks in the plan.
The small kinks, yes.
Yeah, he could go train with Sagan in his house in Utah.
Sagan has a house in Utah?
Pretty sure, yeah.
Really?
I think so.
Weird.
On that note.
Yeah, okay, let's, yeah.
Thanks. Thanks for joining me, Dan. Always good to talk to you.
From anytime.
From the wide angle podium Philadelphia news desk.
Mountain bike news desk. Very uninformed on principalities and or the Commonwealth Games, though.
Yeah, and I'll check up on the Yana or okay. Maya. Now it's too late. Now we've just gone too far. Everybody should check out healthiq.com/CXHairs. Go back to the beginning and listen to my plea about how I really need you all to do that now, and also check out all the shows on wideanglepodium.com. You can make up a little bingo card and just kind of a grid, and then you can put all of the shows, you know, one each, like Consummate Athlete can be like top left, let's say, and then Slow Ride Podcast and Laser Radio and everything, and then you can X them off when Dan shows up on that show.
Slow Ride Podcast already made that joke.
Did they really with the bingo thing?
Not the bingo thing specifically, but, you know, the gist of it.
Just
but it's good. I like it. I like it.
I like taking their material and punching it up.
Perfect. Yeah. There should be a new Honest Bicycle episode
good.
At some point. It was recorded on Monday. It's now Wednesday evening. I don't know what Greg is doing with his life. Presumably adult things.
Yeah.
But anyway, it'll be up at some point.
Don't follow Dan on Twitter, but you can on Instagram.
Literally can't follow me on Twitter. I deleted it.
That's what I mean. You could follow me if you want to, although I'm feel like I should just follow in Dan's footsteps here. But you can follow me on Instagram also at CXHairs. And
I'll also be at a bunch of literally all the Mid-Atlantic Super Series races this month. So, starting with Bear Creek this weekend.
All right, we'll go see Dan and go see which place on the 27th step podium he gets to be on.
That's... Yeah, okay. I'll just leave it there. All right, Bill.
Bye.
Later.